Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today, I'm joined by Tim Ash, an internationally recognized speaker, best-selling author, multiple times, and advisor to some of the biggest brands in the world. With a background in both computer science and cognitive psychology, Tim helps leaders, marketers, and entrepreneurs understand how to influence human behavior ethically. So we're going to look at how persuasion works at a primal level. We're going to talk a little bit about his books, and we're going to just get into his head a little bit because this man has a lot to share. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks, Janice. It's great to be with you. Oh, if you want to get in my head, that's like an attic that needs a major spring cleaning.
Well, I'm going to start like off script completely because I know that you, you've done a lot of schooling and you were in the evolutionary psychology. You've done machine learning and AI before it was sexy to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've been in those and you were involved, I think, in a very, very like makes my brain go crazy world. And that's SEO and optimization and all of those things when, you know, people were just getting started with websites and what works and what doesn't. And you, am I correct there that?
Well, that everything except that last part, SEO is basically ranking high in search engines like Google. My focus in the field that I was one of the founders in is called conversion rate optimization.
That's right.
And that's, so it doesn't matter how you get traffic to your website. The idea is how do you get people to act, whether you want them to buy something, fill out a form, call you, whatever that action is. We were trying to get a higher percentage of people to act. And that's a combination of psychology and measuring things and good user experience and good design.
So that's still relevant today.
Oh, yeah, more than ever.
Yeah, more than ever. But it seems like it's okay. So you've got very left brain things, but also right brain things going on. And then I noticed that you were a fencer in university.
Yeah, I've been known to swing a saber or two.
Yeah, and that you do painting and write poetry and all. That's very right brain. So that's why I say I feel like you're like a Renaissance man.
Oh, well, thank you. I like, and by the way, that whole left brain, right brain thing is one of the things I shoot down in my Unleash Your Primal Brain book. That's basically bullshit. The brain's fairly symmetric, and then the two sides are connected by a superhighway that keeps them in really good contact. So there's no such thing as logical people and creative people. In fact, the first chapter of that book is called The Lie of Rationality. We can't make rational decisions. And I mean that literally. They've studied people who had various kinds of brain damage. The rational brain gives you information and options. The prioritization, the actual decisions that are made are always emotional and instinctual. It's basically whatever gives you the strongest response. As the brain doesn't like to work really hard, the default response of the brain is do nothing. Just keep doing whatever you're doing. Do nothing. Don't expend energy. Don't expect thought. Don't move the body. So for the brain to do something, it has to feel really strongly about something. And all of those infinite options you have in front of you, they're reduced down to what's the one that gets the most strong emotional reaction.
Is that like me always saying I go with my gut?
Yeah. The gut, well, there's actually a nexus of neurons around your brain and your intestines. That is kind of like a secondary little brain. They're learning much more about that now, but that's exactly it. So what I mean is literally you cannot make a rational decision. There's no such thing.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, all those cliches about people say that people buy with emotion and what did they say? Something with logic.
I think that Robert Heinlein, one of my favorite science fiction authors, he had a quote that said, "People don't make rational. People are not a rational animal. They're a rationalizing animal." So what happens is you can see this on brain scans. Someone makes an instinctual decision or an emotional decision, and then a few seconds later, or a few fractions of a second later, if you ask them, why did you make that decision? Then the language parts of the brain kick in, and basically you come up with the alibi. But the alibi is never the reason you actually did something. It's the rationalization for it.
Okay.
And I know I'm kind of like, I'm probably
No, no,
way
I
going
think it's
way
interesting.
off-roading at this
No, you're
point,
not, because I have a
but you
question.
asked.
I think you've answered this question. You've written about, and hold that book up, The Primal Brain Book, because that's the
Well, yeah,
first
so this was
one.
my
Yeah.
previous book that
Right.
I've written
Unleash Your
several.
Primal Brain.
Unleash Your
That's
Primal Brain. Yeah,
okay. And that's really
demystifying how we think and why we act. That's the subtitle.
okay. So you're saying that primal brain drives behavior, and you've just sort of explained how it works, correct? In a simple
Well,
way.
you mentioned evolutionary psychology earlier. I think most people aren't even familiar with the term, so if I can give you a quick
Sure.
411, basically the idea is that we evolved over time, and there are things that we share with the most primitive forms of life on Earth, like insects have dopamine. Well, dopamine is just a way to decide what to use your energy on and how to chase goals. We all share that. And then there are things that we layered on top of that that we got from other mammals. And then there are things at the end of that evolutionary arc that make us bizarrely and uniquely human and why we've taken over the whole planet. So if you really want to understand human behavior, you have to understand that whole arc of evolution and where we picked up various things. So evolutionary psychology explains things based on that. So I describe the Unleash Your Primal Brain as basically the user manual for being human. It's the
Okay.
things that all 8 billion of us on the planet share.
Okay. So do you okay, so let's bring in the new book so we can just see that cover.
Oh, sure. So this is the latest book I
Yep.
wrote with the brilliant Dr. Limor Gottlieb, and it's called Primal Dating,
Yeah, tell me about that. What's the subtitle of that one?
The Unflinching Evolutionary Psychology Guide to Modern Relationships. So it's actually not a dating book. Rather, 10-15% of it has some practical stuff for people that are actively dating, but it's more of a women are from Mars, men are from Venus update, or rather,
Okay.
no offense to John Gray, but his
Yeah.
stuff wasn't very scientifically based.
No.
So this is from an evolutionary psychology. It looks at male and female relationships, what we evolved each other for, non-monogamy, jealousy, all these kinds of things, and then how the modern world distorts it. And then we have very practical guides for mindsets and strategies for both men and women to do better with each other. So it's basically peel back all those cultural layers that we operate from and understand us at kind of the species, psychological, biological level, what our tendencies are, why we act the way we do, without putting those value judgments on top of it.
So, when you're working in a business environment and working with, executives or managers or even just entrepreneurs, business owners, are you going in and talking about how to deal with men versus women, women versus men? Are you teaching, like, do you look at the best ways to influence one or the other and still be ethical and things like that.
Well, the Primal Dating book is really for interpersonal relationships.
Okay.
So it's just designed for that. When I consult, the way that I normally engage, I work with senior executives at companies, and it's called an executive advisory. Essentially, I'm unlimited on call for a senior executive.
Oh,
And the
right.
range of
Okay.
stuff that we cover is, definitely online marketing. I mean, I literally wrote a few books on it and ran
Yeah.
conferences and made 1.2 billion for our clients based on this kind of neuromarketing stuff. We also cover culture, branding, personal purpose of the leaders, how to get loyalty from your employees and build a really strong core culture. One of the things that I work with executives on is, for example, what I call the initiated tribe, how to reliably get people to be both productive and passionate about their work. And back in the day, again, on the Serengeti, a couple hundred thousand years ago, that was automatic. But nowadays, you need to recreate intentional initiation environments that will mimic those elements. And that works for any human tribe. In other words, whatever cultural package you want to bond around, it could be a book club, it could be a high performance company, the elite military unit, a religious cult. It doesn't really matter. The mechanics by which we bond are the same. Modeling by the leaders, peer pressure, synchronized group activities, and overcoming meaningful challenges together.
Okay, but now I have to go in a place that I didn't want to go, but it's such a
Let's do
perfect
it.
example, and that is the American political scene. You know, you get that leader that isn't really an ethical leader, but in my opinion, but
Right.
putting people into, you know, he wants them to be loyal, and they, if they're not, they're out, you know, like, but it's not. Right, that's
So
dangerous.
you touched on a couple of really important things there. So the first is, I didn't say it's for the greater good. I said those are built-in instincts that work with anyone in any
Okay.
situation. So if you apply all four of those ideas, modeling by the leaders, like you have something I want, there's a lot of people, every political leader kind of embody something they want from them. That's the reason to follow the leader. Then peer pressure, seeing how other people in your cultural tribe act, synchronized group activities, you find that all the time in politics and other settings, and overcoming meaningful challenges and struggling together. That's really kind of the final proof that whatever cultural package you're adopting has value, because it's effective and it allows you to overcome adversity and challenges. So those, again, those four elements of an intentional initiation are, if you combine them, you can reliably get people to bond to whatever group you're in. And I'm not advocating whether the cultural package they're trying to, promulgate is a good one. Okay, this can be used for evil, but the point is, understanding human nature allows you to consciously build better, ideally, ethically and positively, better organizations, whether they're communities or companies.
So can you share perhaps a story about a company exec that you've worked with, obviously no names, but just an idea of how you've helped them take their company from where they were to one that embodies those elements that you talked about?
I just mentioned one part of the initiated tribe framework, which is intentional initiations. It actually has two parts before that, which is the personal purpose of the leader. That's the foundational stuff.
Okay.
Then creating a core culture, and then consciously initiating new employees or vendors, partners into that, or customers even. That's the intentional initiation, the four elements that I just mentioned within that. So the first, so I'll give you an example. I had one executive who was a CEO of a company, and he was really driven. No surprise, a lot of entrepreneurs are. But he was, I said, like, what's your personal purpose? And he goes, well, I'm going to be retired by 40 with the 25 million in the bank, and all this kind of stuff. I said, that's not a purpose, for two reasons. One is, it's a goal. If it can be achieved, it's not your purpose, right? And that's a really important distinction. So there are a lot of goal-driven people in entrepreneurship and leadership, but that's not the same as being purpose-driven. And by the way, purpose isn't some softy thing. I mean, I'm in California here. It's like, oh, that's your granola stuff in California. No, purpose is highly
No.
correlated with health span, with financial success, with good relationships, personal and professional relationships. So it's really kind of a turbo boost. If you don't have it, then that's a problem.
Well, does
So
it need to involve something bigger than yourself, though? Does a purpose?
yes,
Yeah, okay.
thank you, thank you. You're you've obviously got the Cliff Notes version. And
No, I just, that's just
you're
me.
no, so in, that's exactly so the first thing I told him is, like, you have a goal, not a purpose, so you need a purpose. The second thing he told me, well, is my purpose is to build this company, blah blah blah. And I said, that's not big enough. What is your purpose on this planet for this lifetime, whether you believe in additional lifetimes or not? I don't know if you're a Buddhist or whatever, but it can't be as small as, I want to build a company. I mean, by the way, I've done a lot of personal development work, and through an initiation through the Mankind Project, which, by the way, I highly recommend to any man. I've developed two purposes. One is positive and one is negative, and happy to share my own with you if you like.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So my positive purpose is, I co-create a world of peace, safety, and love through joyous expression and service.
Beautiful.
That's my bag. And is that something I'm ever going to achieve? No, that's a North Star you're shooting for, right?
But it guides everything else you do.
So the way I describe a purpose, it's like it embodies a values hierarchy. It's a decision-making tool ultimately. And it's really important not to, to have something vague or something really long-winded with like a full paragraph. If you can get it down to a sentence or two, then it's an operative tool. So when I invest energy into something, I say it's a hell yes or it's a no. You know, there's not much in between these days. And so is it alignment with my positive purpose or not? And so again, I think Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, you know, I think everybody needs to come up with a personal meaning and purpose.
So I'm guessing that this CEO that you worked with, who I'm also guessing was quite young because you said by the time he was 40, he wanted to do
Yeah, he
this
was in his
business.
mid-30s.
So how long did it take him to get it?
This was the hardest part. I have to say, not because of the length of time it took, but with the violence with which people react to it. They resist it. They don't want to go that deep. They don't want to live an examined life. And to
I
force
don't have
someone
time
it,
for that kind of thing.
That's soft skills. I'm not interested. You know, so that's the mentality. It's like that's not on my dashboard. That's
Yes,
exactly the
exactly.
point of it. So it wasn't that it took a long time. It took about 3, 4 months to finally solidify a clear purpose for that particular man. But it was a lot of resistance along the way. And then the rest really flowed easily. So step one is personal purpose. Step two is creating that core culture. And the task there is there's a tension between keeping it compact so you can transmit it to other people and making sure it's complete. So that's the tension for a core culture. It's not just that thing you have on your, you know, behind the receptionist desk at your company. It's like our, you know, it's nothing like that. It's something that includes language, technology, values, organization, all of it tied into a tight bundle. And that takes a long time because you have to machete it down and make it compact. That's the hardest part. Since you brought up politics, can I give you a quick example? Okay, so here is a core culture that I can define in four elements that unifies tens of millions of people in the US. White, evangelical Christian, individual rights, gun ownership. Okay, we all know what I'm naming. And regardless of whether you're violently against or really pro, the point is that Republicans, or let's call it the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, punches above their political weight precisely because they have such a compact core culture. It's really easy to transmit. It's really easy to motivate other people with it. And so it's like, what's that joke? I think Will Rogers once famously quipped that I'm not a member of any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Right? So in contrast, you think of all the isms on the, you know, the umbrella coalition under the Democratic side. They're very universal, but everyone's got their own little niche inside of it. So how do you transmit this giant elephant of a corporate or a
No pun
tribal culture
intended.
to others? It's very hard to do. And so again, that's the power of having a very tight and clearly defined corporate culture.
Actually, just using that, and I see that as a very good example or a bad example, however you want to look at it. But which came first, the chicken or the egg? Because the way I understand it, and I'm Canadian, but I can't help but be drawn into, that thing, is that the Republicans were a different whatever before. Their leader now has came into, to the fight, because that create I thought it created that MAGA group.
Okay.
So
So
that's
which is the chicken or the egg? Okay, so I'm not a political analyst. My own feelings are this has been percolating since the 80s, since Reagan, Newt Gingrich, you know, and it's been in the works for 40 year plus years. So I don't look at it as like there is definitely people that can capture the moment and energize groups of people, and that's certainly been done, but it's an acceleration of an existing process in my mind. But it's a legitimate point. It's like, does the leader make the movement, or does the movement ask for the leader to pop up at a certain moment? I think it's largely the latter. I think that there are larger forces in our societies at work. There's a great book called The Fourth Turning that was written in the late 90s, and it describes history in these 80 to 100 year historical cycles and predicts that, well, right now we're in the middle of one, of a crisis period. Well, that's clearly true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm following this woman on Instagram of all places, and she's really clever about that whole thing and how she lives in Europe. She's lived in Europe for 30 years. She's American. She's gorgeous. She speaks a bunch of different languages, and each of her po or whatever you call them, that her videos that she does, she likens whatever's going on today in the States. Yesterday it was the military thing, or 2 days ago it was called, she talked today about the enemy within. And she gave examples from Germany, Nazi Germany. She gave an example from Chile, and she gave an example from what was the third one? Oh, now I can't remember. There were three that she gave, and they were all that where someone had called their leader had talked about the enemy within in their own way and how it manifested in those different places. It was really interesting.
Yeah, I've always been a student of history, and I really like this saying I heard: history may not repeat, but it rhymes. There's these recurring themes that happen in history, and you certainly can learn. You can learn about Caligula at the height of the Roman Empire and apply 75% of that to our current situation. So I do believe that there are larger stories and cycles of human nature that are built into history, and
That's
we
fascinating.
ignore them at our own peril.
Okay, so I'm so completely in a different way than what I
Hey,
planned
like
this
I
to
said,
go.
I'm happy to go
And I
off-roading
love
with you.
it. No, I love it because you're a fascinating, interesting man to talk to, and it could go any which way. That's true. There was something else though that came to mind. So I do want to ask you though, because I find this fascinating, and the difference between, and this one of my questions that's now out of sync. So whatever, it's just coming from left field, okay? So my question is about the difference between the line between influence and manipulation. Is it about intention, outcome, or something else? Now, this probably goes back to what you were used to be doing, right? Because,
Well, I mean, yeah, so I ran an agency called SiteTuners. We were one of the first conversion rate optimization agencies I mentioned, and we created over 1.2 billion in value for the Expedias, Googles, Facebooks, and smaller companies of the world. And most of it was due to these durable neuromarketing principles. So one thing before I answer your question, I want to say is, like, I don't care about the technology. I don't care about AI. I don't care about virtual reality. I don't care if it's, I know what, hologram suppositories tomorrow. Whatever the technology is going to be, we're still trying to influence the human brain and
Right.
the
And it's
human
still about
beings.
people, right? It's
Yeah,
still
and
about
by the
people.
way, and on that note, again, back to evolutionary psychology, we stopped evolving. So if you take the 10,000 generations that it took us to evolve as modern humans, we're essentially unchanged over that time. What's happened in the last two or three or five generations doesn't matter. We're essentially flies in amber. We stopped evolving, and we have to take these brains that were designed for tribes of a few dozen people on the plains of East Africa and apply them to this civilization of overlapping tribes with 8 billion people on the
Oh,
planet.
interesting. Never thought of it that.
So I look at, to me, wisdom as I get older is things that are effective in more situations and are durable across time, and that's what I look for. I don't look at little fads or gimmicks or tricks. And so, to me, evolutionary psychology has been that deep well. That's why people started recently calling me, and I think I'm going to adopt it, Primal Tim, because whether you're applying it to your wellness, to your relationships, to your marketing, to your company culture, it's still all applications of evolutionary psychology. Okay, but I'd be happy to answer your question.
So the question was the line between influence and manipulation.
And I thought about this a lot. I think that everybody who's any kind of in any influence position has to really be grounded in ethics. Everybody, you may have different moral codes, whatever that is for you, but I don't, certainly political leaders, we're lacking that often right now. Company leaders also, and certainly marketers. I think Seth Godin, one of his books, the title was All Marketers Are Liars. And I think that pretty much
Can
captures it.
read
So I
that one,
remember
but yeah.
when we were working with a client once, they had to comply. It was a regulated financial product. And on this landing page to sign up for it, they have to have a disclaimer and it had to be above the button. And so what they asked us to do was to put it in the header of the page. So it was technically above the button, but visually completely not connected to it anymore. They were hiding it. And we lost the client over that. We said, no, that's ethically, that's our line. We're not going to do that. So
Interesting.
you have to stand for something. I think,
Yeah, you
again, you can
do.
have different ethical frameworks, but you have to be honest to your framework.
So do you then, did you then, after that experience, did you check that ethical level before you took on the next clients?
Well, we don't take on clients that ask us when I ran my agency. By the way, I've sold it and I'm focusing on, keynote speaking and this executive advisory I mentioned. But we would just, feel out clients. It's a whenever you have an agency relationship, it's kind of a two-way no assholes rule. And so we always had a trial period, easy out, no problem, because and that's true of my executive advisories too, because I don't want to spend my life with anyone who's not ethical or high integrity.
Of course. I know it's, and yeah, there's so much out there now that you have to be so aware of. Sorry, somebody just having a phone now is worse than having just, or having a watch that's buzzing at me. Anyway, so do you ever come across, I don't know, I'm thinking about a lot of, okay, I'm going to back my question up first and say, do you pay much attention to LinkedIn? Do you look at the news feed on LinkedIn ever?
I do. I keep an eye on it. I basically LinkedIn is my primary, and then Facebook is more for my personal stuff.
Okay. So
That's
do
how
you
I view
follow
it.
any particular leaders on LinkedIn, maybe
For
people you've
thought
worked with?
leadership or news, no, I have my own sources for that kind of stuff. It's just, well, sometimes you get random stuff through the feed that looks somewhat interesting, but no, I don't spend a lot of extra time on LinkedIn. I use it functionally to connect with people and so on.
Okay, fair enough. I was just curious because I see a lot of entrepreneurial leaders that are now like, there's a few in my head that I'm thinking of that I know of their companies and I've seen their companies, grow. And now they're becoming the thought leader to help other entrepreneurs. Okay. And I think that's great. But I also see some heads getting really big and, and getting beyond that sort of, I don't have time to talk to the little guy anymore. So, there's that. And I wonder if you notice any people that, you've worked with or that you've watched come up the, that things change that way for people.
Well, I think I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. You just made a value judgment. Like, I don't have time for the little people, but if you reach a certain level of acclaim or fame or people wanting to impinge on you, let's put it most neutrally, okay, then you have to put up some barriers and defenses to that.
Yeah,
And
fair
that may
enough.
look like assholish behavior. Again, pardon my dropping the swear words all the time, but that if you're going to be standoffish, that's the level of defense you apparently need given the volume of stuff
Yeah, fair
inbound to
enough.
you. So, yes, I have seen people go up that popularity arc and then become more difficult to reach. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that makes it does make sense. Logically, it makes sense. There's just times when I think that it's a shame that they've changed or the perception is changed of them. And I don't know, it just.
Yeah, it will, and it's, I think it's counterbalanced, especially at my stage of life, by wanting to mentor. It's one of the things I talk about in Unleash Your Primal Brain, where we have something different from mammals, not just dominance, but this desire for prestige, which is tied to transmitting culture. That's our superpower. And so when you get older and you've gathered wisdom or skills or whatever, you want to pass that on, and you're rewarded psychologically for mentoring people and
I
helping other
agree.
people.
I
So
agree.
there are things, I'll give away my time. I'm actually going to staff a women's initiation retreat later this month. That's just four days of my life plus a bunch of Zoom meetings for the training and the staff to be coherent that I'm never going to get back, but that's my giveaway. And so
That's
I think
kind of
that
nice.
when you get more popular, if you will, you still have to filter how you spend your time, and that's legitimate, but I try to spend more time on my purpose. And that's not to say that everybody does that. I'm just
That's
saying
true.
that's my approach.
Yeah, I know that's true. So how much of your time have you spent doing personal development? Was it more now when you have more time, or was it all the way through?
I think it went in spurts, and the only thing that's ever motivated me to become a better human is pain. So as bad as this sounds, it's like the story about the old dog that would be waking up out of its sleep and going ooh, every few minutes, and turned out it was laying on a nail. And when you ask why didn't it move, well, I guess it didn't hurt bad enough. I think life's like that. You get
You're right.
you're comfortable, something comes into focus, and then it becomes more and more uncomfortable. When that becomes unsustainable, that's when you want to change. And so there briefer periods of significant growth to reposition for the next chapter in your life. Some people keep sleepwalking their whole lives through. I wasn't exactly early to the party. So, like I said, this initiation weekend that I did through the Mankind Project, I did that in my early 50s. So, but I had other periods like when my dad died in my mid-20s that I did a lot of soul searching and changing.
No, I identify. I was in a period of my life when I early on when I was going through. I'd become divorced as a, and I, now I was searching. I was a single mom, and I there was a friend of mine. It was a guy. He was a teacher. I was a teacher, and he said he said to me, and this was part of their marketing, I'm sure, because I learned over the years, but he said to me, "You need to go to this workshop. Here's a ticket, right? Here's a ticket." And it was a 3-day weekend, and it was a personal growth webinar, seminar, or whatever. And I'm not sure who looked after my baby or my child at the time. I can't remember now, but it was at a time when I was in pain that I needed to do that, right? And then I've done others over the years, and I'm sure there was something I was searching for too at the time. But I do love personal development, so you know that's the other thing. So not everybody does those things, or you know takes the time to know what they're all about, and so they poo-poo them and things like that, right?
And if there was any advice I could give to my kids, they're 18 and 20, so they're not taking advice currently from dad. Just want to make that clear.
They know
But
everything.
yeah, of course. But I would say it's the thing to invest in is understanding yourself, your nature, your character, how you're changing, paying attention, all that. And that's where you get the richer life. Going out there and focusing on the world is actually kind of counterproductive.
There's a book that I remember someone gave me when my daughter was going through some stuff in her early 20s, and it was by Meg Jay. What was it called? Oh, it had a great name too. She has a TED talk about it. It was something about your 20. Oh, I'll have to find it. It's kind of like what you do in your 20s sets you up for your whole life. So do it right. You know, don't do something you'd be regret. And she's a psychologist, and she had different stories in that book. I'm going to find it because it'll annoy me that I can't remember the name. But anyway, there's so much that I'm just going to stall because I can and I want to. because the book was really good. And you've got kids going into that. Her TED Talk, Why 30 is Not the New 20 is her TED Talk. And she's a clinical psychologist. And this was a while ago, but her book came from that too. And I can't find the name of the book. The 20 something treatment, a revolutionary remedy. That's a new one, I guess. But anyway, yeah, Meg J. She's very, very,
I'll look her up.
yeah, she's very interesting. So tell me something else from primal dating that my audience needs to know that, you know,
Well,
that relates to business today.
well, I think,
Relationships,
the well,
relationships.
relationships, now your show is, titled
Yeah,
Relationships. I think
exactly.
the
Relationships.
for many entrepreneurs, the most important relationship you'll ever have is the intimate relationship. That's the foundation for everything else. Either you're supported or you're undercut by what's happening at home. There's no avoiding it. And so I think that your choice of partner, what kind of situation you're in, the stability of it, the value of it is really critical. And so again, in this book, one of the things that we talk about is that people evolve for complementary needs. It's not optional. Like, from an evolutionary standpoint, you kind of sort into roughly equal pairs. You have children, and hopefully to the point that they're mature enough to have their own children. That's the game. There's nothing in there about happiness or the form that that takes or anything else,
But
the durability of it.
that's changed a lot. He's here.
Well, no, it's, so again, from an evolutionary standpoint, it hasn't at all. That's the point. So we have what
Okay.
we evolved for. That's part one of the book. The second part is how modern society has distorted that and made things a lot worse. And then we have a guide for men from the women's perspective and vice versa. And I think, we suggest you read the whole book so you'll
Yeah.
get more self-knowledge and understand the other sex better. But one of the keys is that no one's going to win the gender war. I mean, I don't care if you're one of these red pill goblins in the manosphere talking about, pickup tricks, or if you're a feminist shock trooper talking about how you don't need a man and the patriarchy and this stuff. That's all cultural stuff. No one wins the gender war. If one side wins, the human race is done. And that's what we have, is a crisis in relationship formation, crazy amounts of mental illness, suicidality, radical politics. All of that stuff is actually, after I wrote the book, I realized how deeply the rabbit hole goes. It's really civilizational level things that are happening right now, and they're tied to this kind of the deep need to connect and the misfiring of it in our society.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, isn't it? Really? I know because you there's so many, I mean, my generation kids, a lot of them aren't having kids, you know. So, I mean, the balance is off right now, I think, but
The
hopefully it'll
world
come.
in our lifetime, the world is going to slip
Yes.
into the same rapid exponential growth that took our species from, a million on this planet to 8 billion
Yeah.
in a few thousand years, is going to reverse. Because right now, pretty much every part of the world, and with a few exceptions, are below fertility replacement rates. So the math, works in reverse just as well as going up. And we don't have a model for that world. We don't have a communism, fascism, capitalism. None of that works in a society where you have a lot of older people and not many young people.
Fascinating discussion. Totally off the side of what I was going to talk about, but I so appreciate that we could have this conversation and that we could, that you were flexible, and also that I was, you know, I really appreciated the time with you, and I'd like you to hold your books up again because I think that from our conversation it makes it much more relevant for people to go and read those books because you are a clever guy and there's some interesting conversation starters in that book, in
Well,
those
thank you.
books.
I appreciate your kind words. So the easy, so if you're interested in the prime Unleash Your Primal Brain, kind of the user manual for human beings, that's at primalbrain.com. Primal Dating is at primaldating.com. Of course, you can get them on Amazon or wherever books are sold. And then if you just want to reach out to me about public speaking or find out more about my executive advisory, that's just at timash.com. And of
Perfect.
course, on LinkedIn, as I mentioned, that's where I do hang out for. Feel free to connect there.
Totally. And I thank you so much for spending your time with us. I do ask my listeners to check out your information, your books, and your website. And I'll put those in the show notes for sure. And one last thing, just remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.